Chapter 10, Dodging Vietnam. Mid-September, 1966. Being drafted for the war in Vietnam was a constant threat, a muted anxiety that followed me wherever I went. I'd been called up many times, but I had procrastinated repeatedly, throwing away the third and fourth draft notices and hoping the whole thing would just quietly fade away. Finally, right after our wedding, I was summoned to an FBI office and told I must appear at an Army induction center in New York. It was confirmed by letter 2 days later that if I failed to make an appearance, I would go to jail. I thought about the best way to deal with the situation. I wasn't ready for another term in prison, so not turning up was no longer an option. A high school friend of mine named Jim Snyder had been called up a few years earlier, and he'd avoided being drafted by taking a whole tube of Benzedrine tablets. He'd stayed up for 3 days, didn't shave, and got drunk right before he went, so he couldn't act coherent, even if he had wanted to. To crown it all, when he turned up at the induction center in Portland, Oregon, he'd wet his pants. He said if it worked for him, it would work for me. There were numerous cases like Jim's, but I didn't think I had the courage to pull off such a risky stunt. Also, now that I was initiated, I wasn't taking any drugs. "I'm just dreading this," I said to Janaki. "What should I do? Where should I go?" "Don't worry, it'll be okay." She sounded more confident than I felt. "Krishna will get you out of there. He will. Surely anyone who doesn't take intoxicants or eat meat or have illicit sex or gamble won't be taken by the U.S. Army. The Swami says Krishna protects his devotees." "That's true," I thought. "The Swami does say that. It's all well and good saying Krishna will protect you, but I'm still going to have to put myself at the mercy of the draft board." I thought about it over the next few days. On the one hand, I was scared and didn't have much faith that Krishna would help me. But on the other, I felt that maybe it was time to put an end to my years of draft dodging. Now that I had met the Swami, I had some understanding that the things going on in this world were part of a bigger picture. After all, Krishna, or at least the Swami's philosophy, had helped me when I was in jail. "I'll just have to go and face it," I thought. "I don't know what I'll do or how I'll handle it, but it's out of my control now. I'll just have to leave my fate in Krishna's hands." It was with this rather fatalistic attitude that I decided to forego the option of taking drugs. The night before the induction, we slept in the New York Temple room. I thought that if I was going to be relying on Krishna to protect me, it would be a good idea to be there in his temple the night before my day of reckoning. The following morning dawned bright and sunny, a sharp contrast to my dark and nervous mood. Although I wasn't prepared to take drugs, I didn't want them thinking I was keen to be a soldier, so I didn't shave, and I wore untidy, unclean clothes. As I climbed the long, wide stairs of the induction offices in Lower Manhattan, I chanted softly to myself and thought that if worse came to worse, I would just lie down and not cooperate, a la Mahatma Gandhi. I made my way to a long counter at the far end of a room full of inductees, mostly African Americans. "Blacks fighting Buddhists in the blistering Vietnamese jungles?" I asked myself. "It doesn't make any sense. Even though we might not be our bodies, life is still so body-based in this country, and probably the rest of the world too." Strangely to me, most of the men there seemed to want to be drafted. I overheard an excited conversation between two black guys who were hoping they would be shipped out the same day to Virginia for the basic military training. I handed my crumpled FBI papers to the official behind the counter. He eyed my dirty clothes as he smoothed out the wadded piece of paper. "Let's see. Grant, eh?" He turned. He opened a filing cabinet behind him and pulled open a drawer. As he rifled through the files, I chanted softly, mumbling the mantra to calm myself. He looked up from the cabinet and gave me a long stare. Finally, he found my file, but he read only the first page before pointing to a room at my left. "Okay, you need to go into that room," he said. I felt panicky. Why hadn't I just taken a large dose of Benny's, like Jim, and failed the physical examination? It would have been so easy. I would have been sick for only a day, but getting out of going to Vietnam would have made it worth the trouble. Now here I was, without any preparation. In the tiny green office, a man sat behind a metal desk, observing four teenagers who all seemed to be in various states of derangement. It was then that I realized I'd been assigned to the irregular category, probably on account of mumbling at the main desk. I decided then and there that I was going to make the most of this. I chanted the Hare Krishna mantra audibly, purposely not making eye contact with anyone in the room. I knew I was creating a spectacle, but that was the whole point. Another uniformed officer came in and deposited a pile of files. I overheard the man at the desk say to this newly arrived colleague, "These kinds of people aren't good timber for the army." He nodded in my direction and didn't appear to care whether or not I heard him. It seemed like a good sign to me. Finally, after 30 agonizing minutes, the man at the desk stood up and walked over to me and waved a slip of paper in my face. "Go upstairs to see the psychiatrist," he said. I stumbled into the top floor office, which was flooded by sunlight pouring in through a huge ribbed skylight. Behind a lone big desk sat an elderly man whose name badge said N. H. Gearhart, M.D. He looked friendly enough as he sized me up through his thick glasses, half smiling. His thick German accent broke the silence of the office. "You are afraid to go into the army, yeah?" he asked. I thought this was a loaded question. "I don't know," I murmured, determined to come off as neurotic, psychotic, or at least uncommunicative and unable to follow basic instructions as possible. "I haven't been out for a few months. I don't want to see anybody." I watched him writing on my file. He paused and looked at me. "I'm going to classify you 1Y, he said. "You would go only in a national emergency, okay?" I felt a strange surge of relief and thought, why isn't the Vietnam ward already considered a national emergency? The doctor watched me closely as he delivered this news. My heart was hammering with joy, but I acted impassive, as if I didn't care or didn't understand. I wasn't sure if the doctor knew I was faking. What I was sure of was that 1Y meant I was effectively free. 4F would have been better. 4F would have meant that I could never be called up under any circumstances. But I was happy with 1Y. "You can go back home now," he said, handing me a piece of paper. "Be careful." I headed to the door and didn't say goodbye. After years of postponement, my dreaded ordeal was over quickly and easily. "Thank you, Krishna," I thought, and walked back to the temple to tell Janaki, the Swami, and the devotees that Krishna had saved me after all.